Accession number 22077, reel 3.
Harold Morris Metcalf, reel 3. Okay, so you'd seen the burning bush.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we came back to... All right?
Yes, that was Christmas then.
That's right, Christmas Day, 1930. We came back to barracks. I put the skull and crossbones under my bed. Didn't sleep very well, actually. The following morning, I was going from my barracks to the 1721st barracks. I'm walking down the road, and a young lieutenant, second lieutenant, stopped me. He wasn't me. He was 10th Hussars. And he said, "What have you got there, boy?" Like they used to. And I didn't know what to say. You know, it was a bit awkward. And he said, "What have you got there, boy?" And I said, "Well, I have skull and crossbones to take to the 1721st band, sir. May I see them?" And I opened up this parcel and showed him. And he said, "Jolly good." Wrapped it up. And he went. Just down the road, there was our provost sergeant. Wivenawana, not Piggy, it's another man. He said, "Boy, what did he want?" I said, "He wanted to see what I had in the parcel." "And you showed him?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You know who that was, boy?" I said, "No." He said, "That was Henry, Duke of Gloucester." And it was Henry, Duke of Gloucester. I mean, I could tell you, many years later, I met him again, and he remembered it.
Really?
Really, I'm not joking about
it. What sort of a chap was he?
He was the old Duke. He was a very nice man, actually. A very nice man. Could I digress here? I'll tell you why. Because many years later, I was a WO2 in the Special Branch Military Police. And we were in a station called Iserlohn, near Dortmund, Westphalia. And the Duke was coming over to see his old regiment, the 10th Hussars, with whom my small detachment had food and our money from, you know, because I had a small section there. And I was given the job, because I was in charge of German police as well at the time, and to see that all these security arrangements were made. I had the military police and my special branch chaps and the civil police. And after the parade, he came round to talk to us. And when he came to me, he said words like, "And who were you with before you were in the police, Sergeant Major?" I said, "I was in the Gloucester Regiment, sir." And he said, "Oh, yes," he said, "I was in Cairo with them." I said, "Yes, I know, sir." He said, "I beg your pardon." I said, "There was an occasion once when I had a skull and crossbones. But you're that band boy, aren't you? This is true, honestly." I found it quite often with the royal family. Quite wonderful memories. The Queen Mother, that's another story. But that's it. But I've always remembered that. My wife was most impressed when I got back and told her. But anyway, that's what happened that morning. And then we were told we were due to go to Singapore. And there was a parade on the Maidan there. And the guards were there. The grenadiers, they'd come out for the first time, I think, abroad. And it was one of those things, you know, these blokes, they never been out, you know, sort of business. And they had to parade. And I remember the brigadier saying, "You'll have a long way to go to catch up to these men from the Gloucestershire Regiment." You know what I mean? Oh, and everybody was bursting with pride.
So was this a huge, great parade, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Maidan, the sports place, you know, we called them the Maidan, was a huge area across. And, excuse me.
What are the Gloucester's duties been in Egypt? What were they?
Nothing particularly. We were just there as imperial troops, you know. Didn't do very much, really. Oh, I must tell you one story. I was only there from December to February. A cook's tour, we called it, of course, obviously. But the bandmaster one day, the band president, Tabs Campbell, came up and he said, "I want three boys to go into town to book seats for the opera, for the band. Jarvis, Metcalf and Ford, you three can go." He knew Jarvis and I were friends anyway. And Henry Ford was a bass player. And I'd never been in town before, you see. Because we were not allowed out in Cairo unless we went in threes as boys or with a man. And you had to have your side a splob stick, we called it. It was like a pickhill handle with a piece of red of metal on the top, just in case you were attacked. You wore
was,
it.
Was there much fear of attack or keeping the
No.
Or,
it
was quite a civilized.
At that time, there was very little. The military were there, and nobody took much notice of them. Quite frankly, you know, the men used to go out and mix with all the girls and so on.
So you felt quite safe.
Yeah, quite safe. And but you were not allowed out unless there were three of you. We went on the tram. This is the story I want to tell you. We got on the tram, and a lady came on with one of the. They were all in those days right up to there. You know, what nothing modern about it then. And she was pregnant, obviously, very heavily. And during our journey, she went to the front of the tram and had her baby. I'm not joking. I was only 15, you know. I couldn't believe it. She came. It's true. And my chum said, oh, this happens all the time out here. And in India, it was even worse. However, that was that. And when we went, we booked the seats, and he said, right, we're going to have a drink. Now, they took me out. Now, they had been in Cairo for nearly 2 years, these two boys. And John said, we'll take you to a place. And they took me to this place, and it had a peculiar smell. And there was a settee quite as big as that. And they said, you sit here, Mick. And I sat down there, and they said, we won't be long. And suddenly, a deep voice said, follow me, and took my hat. And I looked round, and it was a big Nubian woman, stripped to the waist. Oh, I was scared to death. I'm not joking. I really was scared to death. When I think back to it now, I don't know why I was scared, but I was. And she said, follow me. And I sat there petrified. A little later, these two came back, and they said, where's your hat, mate? I said, some woman, black woman, took it. And John said, where did she go? And I showed him the way. He came back with my hat. We came out, and on the door, there's big figures, 28, Sharon Waza Burka Street, the biggest brothel in Cairo, yes? Of course, I knew very little about those things in those days. I mean this sincerely. And I was horrified.
So and your two friends?
Yeah, been they'd been before. I mean, John's brother was a band sergeant, and John always had money, my chum. And we went to a cafe and had a drink, lemonade. And the girl asked him, she said, where's your brother? She knew him, you know. I'm not joking. I when I learned what it was after, I was horrified. I never wrote and told my mum, which I should have done, but I didn't.
And better not, really.
Yeah. So came out the time to leave Cairo.
Can I just sort of finish
sure.
this? I mean, you've been a boy soldier now for just a year, haven't you?
Yes.
I mean, nowadays, if you were talking about boys and boy soldiers and men and things, you know, people would say, you know, do you have ever had any bother with the men, you know, with these nice young...
Can I put it this way? I better be careful about a name because he's still alive and he's a major. But we had two boys who were obviously homosexual. Obviously. And it was quite awkward for the rest of us, really, because we knew. And I'm telling you that sodomy in those days was quite the most serious of offences. Every month we had King's Regulars read out to us from various... But that was always the thing, venereal disease and sodomy. And it frightened me when I first heard it all, because I knew nothing about that. So, anyway, I know they were all... They never wanted for anything, these two boys. Two of the bandsmen they were friendly with, and that was it. And one I saw only last year, Major... Lovely little chap, but that's how it was. There were also, how can I put this, 12 known...
Predators?
No, 12 known queers. Mm. Quite nice looking chaps, most of them. Mm. And apart from anything else, these 12 chaps, we had a regimental concert party, and they were always the girls, yes? I have photos somewhere, but they were always the girls. And the RSM used to train them to kick their legs and so on, yeah? And they were wonderful. But how can I put this? It was known. It was known. They were never caught on the job, but, I mean, everyone knew about it, from the colonel downwards. We had one queer officer as well, but that's something else. However... Can I put it this way? Three of them were crack athletes, one of whom was my Lance Corporal. When he was doing the 440, I can see him now, you know, wonderful athlete. And of course, that's why they all got away with it. Because most of them were either footballers, bloody rugby players, you know what I mean. And no one thought any more about it. They were just one of the boys. Yeah. It never reared its ugly head at all, except every month we had this instilled into us about this. One story I could tell you, and I will in a moment, but... I'm sorry. We went to Port Tewfik to embark on, guess what, the Somersetshire again. Yes. We called in at Ceylon. I've forgotten the name of the port now. But whatever, we called in at Ceylon. The boys were not allowed ashore again. And then we... Not Ceylon. We're going to Bombay. No, we called in at Bombay first. Sorry, that's right. And then we went on to Ceylon. Then we went on to Singapore. Now, here's another story I want you to... How can I put this? We arrived in Singapore, we got off the docks, and we went to march up to our barracks at Tanglin. Tanglin Barracks.
L-I-N.
As we left where we were, I said to my chum, when we turn round the next corner, we'll be in Orchard Road. Yeah? And when we turn round the next corner, we were in Orchard Road. And my chum said, how the bloody hell did you know that? I said, I don't know. But I knew that's where. We didn't have the band with us because the instruments were all packed away. And I think there was a Malay band playing us up. We marched to the barracks and I said, we're coming to the Botanical Gardens in a minute on the right-hand side. And we did. And the barracks are on the left up the hill.
Could you have looked at a map, you know, in the book?
Never seen it. No. I'm not trying to be funny about this, but that's the way it was. I could never understand. Nothing like that ever happened to me again, but that's how it was. I'd never been there before. And I never saw a map. I didn't even know where Singapore was, really, except for my school days. We settled down reasonably well. The garrison church, I don't know what it was called, the garrison church, because it was our church, was right on the edge of the sports field, and then the boys' barrack room came there. And we were on stilts in those days. Later on, they sent us to Fort Canning, where they pulled all the buildings and rebuilt them. What I want to say really is that when we got there, it was time for breakfast. We marched up to the dining hall. I should have said before, the food we had in Egypt was, the word is crap. I'm sorry, that's what I can, there's no other way of describing it. It was awful. We lived through it, but it was awful. We got to this dining room, and there are these Chinese cooks with their lovely white hats in all spotless white clothes and eggs and bacon on greaseproof paper. Don't get me wrong, but it was like being in the Ritz for us, you know. It was absolutely wonderful. And our storeman was called Dipped in Storeman because he used to like his bread dipped in the fat. You know what I mean? He was called Dipped in. And that morning, he had a wonderful time because the Chinese blokes were tickled to death with him, you know. But it was wonderful. The food in Singapore was absolutely out of this world. And after Cairo, you know, it really was even better for us because it was a wonderful station.
So you were still with the 1st Gloucesters, were you?
Yes, so I stayed with the regiment, yes.
Yeah.
I was now playing...
You were still in the 2nd Battalion?
No, 1st Battalion. The 1st Battalion was in Egypt.
Right.
That's where we went, to the 1st... Right. We joined up for the 1st Battalion, that's where we all went, these boys.
So these were army cooks, these Chinese cooks?
No, they were civilians. This is how it was in Singapore in those days.
So what was the Tanglin barracks like then? You were saying
wonderful.
Stilts?
Most of them were on stilts, but during our...
Wooden buildings?
No, quite substantial buildings, but whilst we were there, all the buildings were... We went to a place called Fort Canning while this was being done, and all the buildings were levelled to the ground. I don't know why they did that, because the snakes were quite often about.
So how high were the stilts? These were stone.
4 feet.
Brick buildings.
Steps to go up to them,
yeah,
to get in.
With a veranda.
That's right. Yeah. And then they were taken right down, and then we had a veranda on both sides. Mm-hmm. Toilets, beautiful toilets, all very posh. Not like we had before in Egypt. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it really was a wonderful place. It really was.
It was a big station, was it?
For us, yes. Mm-hmm. There was... We were on our own in Tanglin Barracks. Big officers' mess, big sergeants' mess, big sports grounds, beautiful. Plantation of bananas just by, pineapples just away. Anyway, Black and Matty and Paula Brani were islands where the Royal Artillery were stationed. Two different batteries of artillery. So that's how we had connections with those. I'm not joking, it was really wonderful. First of all, we had punkers. Not electric ones. The man used to sit there like this, you know, pulling the cord. It was wonderful. It really was wonderful.
How did you take to that? Because, I mean, you've got sort of servants, really, haven't you? Or people,
well,
you know.
Yes. I don't think it ever affected us, we boys, very much. Because, can I put it this way? When we were in England, we used to get 2 shillings a week pay. In Egypt, we got 10 piastres, just over 2 shillings. In Singapore, we got $1, 2 shillings in forms. And it didn't go very far, I can assure you, by the time you bought your polish and sent a letter home and so on. However, I'd never been wanting for money. I'd always cleaned men's kit, and I always got a couple of pence here and there. I never wanted. In fact, I sent money home to my mother quite often, and I'd already arranged when I joined up, much to the disgust of my company commander, that my mother would have a shilling a week of my money, and it did all the time I was serving, till I got promoted. But that's another story, isn't it? And Singapore was a wonderful station, except it was out of bounds to us when we arrived.
And the we had to stay in the barracks.
We were all confined to barracks, the whole regiment, including officers.
Right. Why was that?
Because there was a regiment called the King's Liverpools who had been there before, and when they left, they smashed the whole bloody place up. I'm not joking. I mean it sincerely. We didn't know about this. It was almost a month before we were allowed into town. Always had trouble with the King's Liverpools, wherever I went, except when we were fighting with them. They were wonderful chaps, but that's another story. But Singapore, we didn't like it one bit, because it was supposed to be a wonderful place, you know. Came the time when the SCC, the Singapore Cricket Club, asked the regiment if they would play them at rugby on our pitch. Tabs Campbell was our adjutant. He was called Tabs because his ears used to stick out like this. Lovely man, wonderful rugby player. And we had a wonderful rugby team anyway. And when they came up, I can see it now, all the regiment with their 28th on their chest and all that. They lined up and had a picture taken. And at halftime, we were winning 28-0. Now, my regiment was the 28th of foot, 1st Battalion, 28th of foot. And we didn't know, but Tabs Campbell said to the men, "I don't want anyone to score again. Leave that score on the scoreboard." Big scoreboard, 28-0. And it stayed there till we played them once again, years, months later. And after that, the ice had been broken and we were allowed in town.
So what was Singapore like when you went in?
Wonderful. Not like it is now. It was the only tall buildings, I would think, was the theatre right in the town, and Raffles, which was still Raffles then, wonderful, and a Chinese quarter, a Malayan quarter, and an English quarter.
Were you warned or instructed, you know, how to behave?
Oh yes, you were. And where you were not,
that
was told you by your company commander once a month, just like our, you know, we were instructed. Actually, before we actually went out at all, we were instructed that They didn't want any repetition of what had happened before. Now, I'm not being funny. Our regiment were pretty good. They were pretty good chaps. We had one court-martial in Singapore. Not all very serious. And he got away with it. But no one ever spoke to that man again in my regiment.
What had he done?
Something very little. Something to do...
But he'd let down.
But he let the regiment down. And I'm not joking... I'm not joking. I mean, the Gloucester Regiment was still is to me, although I was in the police longer than that, but the regiment's always been the same, and wonderful people.
So when you went into town, what did
you do? Well, we were very, very lucky. I know this sounds daft at this stage, but Dipton Stormont had an uncle who'd been out there before, and he knew a Chinaman in Singapore who ran an ice cream bar. A parlour, yeah? I've forgotten his name now. Lee Kim something. I've got a Chinese man here and one next door at the moment. And he took three of us boys in. And we went to that shop and we didn't pay anything. We ate ice cream till we came out of our ruddy ears. But that's how it was, you know. But the regiment were treat. It was so wonderful. At the end, they applied to keep us there for 18 months. We didn't go because the Wiltshires had already been left to come and relieve us, but that's later on. But Singapore was wonderful. It really was wonderful. I didn't go out very often, except when I was playing out with the band. I was a band vocalist.
All right.
And
so you'd sing...
Yeah.
Was this a regimental band?
Yes.
Yes. What sort of things would you sing?
Anything from the musical comedies.
Right. Where would you do this? Was this at concerts?
Yes.
Yes. Soirees or balls? Or
first of all... As soon as we were allowed into town, my bandmaster said to me, I think, Metcalf, you ought to join the musical society. The regiment will pay the fee, because I used to sing rather well. I was a boy soprano at the time. And they paid for me to join the musical society.
Was this the Singapore Musical
yes,
Society?
Yes, SCC.
Not
no, the Singapore Musical Society. And... I was only soldier in the group, by the way, when I joined, and I sang with the ladies, which was rather lovely. But the fact of the matter is that the bandmaster of the Singapore police, quite a few of them were mostly English officers, his wife and daughter also belonged to the music society, and he told my bandmaster that if it was necessary, twice a week, he would come and pick me up, take me into town and bring me back, which was wonderful for me. Of course, I'm not going to say that what they used to say to me, some of the boys, but I was lucky. I was just sheer lucky, that's all. In fact, my music ability stood me in good stead right throughout my army service, but that's another story. The first time I went there and I sang, we were doing a thing called The Revenge, A Ballad of the Fleet. I'd learned it at school as a poem. At Flora's in the Azores, Sir Richard Grenville lay, when a pinnace like a fluttered bird came flying from far away. And I remember it so well because my teacher said, you know what flying from far away is, Metcalf? I said, no, sir. He said, it's alliteration. Remember that. But we had to learn this to sing this, you see, and I had no problem because I could read music and I knew the words already. So I was well in. And the other thing was... Blessed Pair of Sirens, Parry, Pleasures of Heaven's Joy, which my mother kept the copy I sent her. It's still upstairs somewhere. And that was that.
So what was civilian? You had a sort of an entry into civilian society, didn't you, in Singapore?
Yes, because of the music society.
Did the British civilians mix with civilians of other nationalities?
Oh, yes, very much so. In fact... I think Singapore was my first realisation that people could do this. You know what I mean? Particularly the Chinese folk. They mucked in very well, sorry. And my adjutant, Tabs Campbell, he decided the boys ought to have cycles. So he bought cycles for the 11 of us boys in the band, and we were to pay back, but we never did. But we used to go out on Thursdays in Singapore, was called Bugging Out Day. It was a holiday given by the Queen for troops to have a day off. But we called it Bugging Out Day because first thing in the morning you get up and you take your beds, which were two things that used to fold up like a chair, you know, metal, and strip them down, take your palliasses out, core matting, take all the core out and tease it up so that instead of that, they were up like this by the end. But then I hate to say this, but you'd pick the bugs out of your palliasses. It was just one of those things. And you'd smash your bed down on the veranda and all these bugs would be, truly, it's true. I know it sounds terrible, but it's true. And we used to collect them up, put them in a 50 cigarette tin, put methylated spirits in and burn them. That's what we used to do.
What sort of bugs were these? Were these fleas?
Flea bugs. Fleas. Bed bugs. Yeah. Mostly bed bugs. Right.
Were they a big problem?
It was a problem. Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Because some chaps, when they got bitten, they turned bad. Mm-hmm. You know, septic. I can't believe this now when I think back to it. But we used to do this first thing in the morning before breakfast. Get your beds back in. Breakfast on the bikes. And we used to go towards Johor. And we used to get to a place called Bukit Timah, a little village. And they would give us coconut milk. Always, whenever we went there, these villagers would come out with a coconut milk, you know. It was just one of those things. It was lovely. When we go on to this big hill, we didn't know what the first time, we didn't know anything about it. We just had our bicycles and we were stripped off just to the, you know, we had our things in a little bundle on the back and we all stripped to the waist. It was all right while you were driving, but once you stopped, it was, Singapore was terrific. And it rained quite often. Quite often when you were on parade and it rained and you were in khaki or white drill, whichever it was, starched, you feel like a dead duck because it used, you know, take all the starch out. And then the sun would come out and you see the regiment going by with a heat haze over them. Truly, you can't believe this, but it's true. And when we went to this place past Bukit Timah, the first time we got there, we stayed at this great big hill. We never ever got to Johor, by the way. And suddenly up came these trucks loaded with pineapples. About 20 trucks. Well, we couldn't do very much, but we got behind the last one and took one off. But the next time we went, we took a basket with us and we all came back with about 12 pineapples. And these blokes got to know us every week and they used to get slower and slower. You can't believe it now, but isn't it wonderful, eh? I can remember all these things.
The British military were terribly welcome there.
Very welcome. Yeah. High esteem. I'm not joking. And my regiment in particular. I'm not joking about this. And I'll tell you why. Oh, incidentally, during the time we were singing, I woke up one morning and found that I wasn't speaking like this. I was speaking like this. And that was it. My voice had changed completely overnight. I didn't sing for nearly 3 weeks. And then I became a reasonable tenor singer. We had a concert party, I told you. And in Singapore, they were called the Tanglin Titbits. I tried to find the book that a bloke sent me the other day of the programme. I was Rodolfo. And I sang a song called I Would Gather Stars Out of the Blue for You and Just a Broken Dream of Russian Rose. And, oh, it was wonderful. But we put this concert on at the Singapore Music Theatre, which was like the Bristol Hippodrome, to raise money for a whole week we did this, to raise money for planters who had become destitute because there was a tea drought. All right? 1931. And they raised enough money to send quite a few of these chaps home. After that, the regiment was all upon the hill. Everyone thought we were wonderful people. And they were. I never forget that concert. And it was a wonderful week. And then I went back to the Music Society as a tenor. And, of course, then I had to sing more with the band. And the dance band in those days, sometimes we would play from 8 o'clock at night to 2 o'clock in the morning. And I used to sing with a megaphone because there was no microphones in those days. However, I've gone on singing all my life, I don't know, because it was quite a chore, really. Not that I wondered. And then at officers' mess, the officers in those days used to do all sorts of crazy things, throw one another over the bloody veranda and that sort of thing, you know.
Right, I'll stop you there. It's all right. Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 3.